The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Are you a healthcare professional looking to translate psychedelic research into practice? Then register for Psychedelic Harm Reduction and Integration, a professional training offered by psychologist Elizabeth Nielsen and Ingmar Gorman at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Earn 12 continuing education credits as you discover how to better support clients who have an interest in psychedelics. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello and welcome to the Radiate Wellness Podcast with your host, metaphysician, Reiki master, and hypnotherapist, Christy Clemens Hoffman. Each week, we will discover teachings, tips, and tools to radiate your best life ever with practitioners, authors, and luminaries to help you on your path. Wellness, joy, peace, abundance. What do you want to radiate?
Hello and welcome back to the Radiate Wellness Podcast, where today we radiate telepathy with Jess Curzon, who is the author of A Mind Beyond Words, My Decades of Discovery with an Extraordinary Guide. So Jess has a postdoctorate in philosophy. I've never heard of this before, and has worked in a huge variety of roles in many educational settings, from specialist of speech and language to the head of English, from running an alternative education hub of some educated children in a medieval abbey, Undercroft, to working with a farmer and a life-sized model calf, delivering workshops on social and emotional skills in rural primary schools in the west of England. And this story is really quite remarkable, the story of one of her students, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. Thank you so much for joining me today, Jess. I really appreciate it.
It's a real pleasure, Christy, and I'm very, very happy to be here.
Yeah, this story, Jess, it seems amazing. It's a strong and unusual bond forged between school teacher and an autistic boy. Can you tell us what happened? Because I could just sit here and read all of this, but I'd rather hear it from you.
Sure. Okay. So for the first half of my life, really, I was an ordinary, everyday primary school teacher. That's like elementary school in your country, I think, 5 to 11 year olds. Yeah. So I just went to work, did my job, and came home. I'd got 3 children of my own, and I kind of fell into this strange job, which was working with children with speech and language difficulties. And I only had 10 children in the class because it was very intensive work. And each of them had a statement of special educational needs. And a lot of them couldn't make intelligible speaking sounds. Some of them couldn't understand speech and joining conversation. And quite a few of them couldn't do either. So it was quite a challenging job, which is why I had to get the extra degree, which is just a postgraduate degree, not postdoctorate. I'm not that clever, I'm afraid. So I'd been doing this job, I guess, about 7 years. I thought I knew everything there was to know about helping kids who had real problems with communication to become better speakers, and my role was to move them back into mainstream school where they could get on with their education. Yeah, I got pretty good at it, I thought. Everything was going along fine until one day this new little boy joined my class. As you said, he was 6 years old. He had a diagnosis of autism. He also had quite a profound speaking difficulty. There were a lot of sounds his mouth couldn't make because of the muscles in his mouth. So he had a very limited group of sounds that he could produce. And it was quite hard to understand him. So he was just like any other kid in my class, I thought. And about 3 or 4 weeks into the term, I realized that my lessons just weren't going terribly well. Things kept getting lost. Things kept going a bit wrong. Children weren't listening to me. I was working as hard as ever. I had a lovely, well-behaved group of kids, but they just didn't seem focused and I didn't seem focused. And I thought, it's almost like somebody's trying to sabotage my lessons. So I thought, well, that's a bit weird, you know, it can't be. I've always done this job. I'm fine at it. I know what I'm doing. But nothing's changed except this one new little boy that's joined the class. So I thought, well, perhaps I need to start watching him. So I started watching this little boy whose name was Asher very, very carefully. And gradually I realized that whenever something went missing, he was the one who found it. And whenever something went wrong in the class, he was somehow involved in all this. And with only 10 children to watch, you know, I keep an eye on him pretty carefully. And so one day I planned a lesson and I thought, right, I'm going to watch this kid. It was a maths lesson. He was really good at maths. He was very smart at numbers. And it was adding up numbers mentally in your head. And so I'd ask a child a question, the child would give the right answer, I'd write the answer on the board. And then Asher said, no, and told me the answer was something different. And I'd say, well, no, it's not. He got it right, this other kid. And he said, no, because you said such and such instead of what you did say. And I thought, I know I said it right, but he was messing it up on purpose. Do you see what I mean? And he was sowing these seeds of confusion. So I watched till the end of that lesson, and then I was convinced it was him. And I took him aside at the end of the week, and I said, Asher, why are you playing these little mind games on me? And he said, what mind games? I thought, well, he's only six. So I explained what mind games were, and his eyes absolutely glowed, and he had a grin absolutely huge, and he said, so it's you. I thought it were you. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said he'd been planning tests and he'd tried these tests out on various adults in his life. He tried it on his mum and he tried it on other relatives. He tried it on his nursery school people and his teacher at his last school. And he was waiting to find the person who sussed what he was doing. And when he'd found that person, he'd got the one he wanted. So I said, okay, so I passed your test. I mean, just picture it. I'm a middle-aged school teacher and it's this little kid with all these educational problems. But I said, why did you do it? And he said, because I was looking for the person I'd made a deal with. And I said, well, you've only just joined my class and I don't remember making any deal with you. And he said, no, before I was born.
Wow.
Yeah. And that moment was when my life changed. It was that statement, before I was born. I mean, why would a six-year-old child come up with something like that? And I believed him, Christy. I absolutely thought, this child is so clever. I'm a very experienced teacher and he's been completely pulling the wool over my eyes for weeks now. He's been doing all these clever little things. He's telling me the truth. So that's how we started. That's how I got to know him.
Oh my God. It goes beyond, doesn't it? I mean, here you are a speech language pathologist and you're finding this extraordinary child. Where does the telepathy come in?
Well, that was the next stage of our little journey together. So you want me to tell you that bit of the story?
I would love for you to tell me that bit of the story.
Right. Okay. So a few weeks after Asher and I had had our little conversation and I'd been told I was the one who was going to be his special helper, I was watching him and the other children out playing in the school garden. And they'd got a little tricycle taxi that one kid could pedal and the other and two more could sit on the back. And I think he was the one who was driving the taxi. And all of these children, because they were in this socialized unit, they all came from far out. So they were all taxied in the morning with an escort and they were all dropped off at school and picked up by a taxi in the evening. So they were playing a game of coming and going to school in their taxi. But as I watched, I realised there was no conversation going on because they didn't speak, they couldn't speak, but everybody knew where they were supposed to be, what they were doing, who was going to be picked up next. There was no fighting over who was going to sit in the tricycle like you'd expect little kids to do. There was nobody trying to push Asher out of the seat so that they could sit in it and drive. All knew exactly where everybody was going to be and what was going on. And as I watched them, I just knew they are communicating with each other. There is something going on here, and it's not verbal and it's not signing. We did use Mackerton Sign Language, but nobody was signing. They were just looking at each other and they were laughing and making sound effects, but that was all. And I thought, this is telepathy. They are talking to each other via telepathy. And the next thing I thought was, if I mention this to anyone else on the staff here, I'm going to lose my job because they're going to think I'm barking mad. Well, that, I don't know if there is that kind of a school, but there certainly wasn't back then. So I just kept quiet and I just watched, and gradually I can only think that they sort of attuned me to it and I started to pick it up, because there were other adults who worked in the classroom and worked with these children. Nobody else got any of this, but there was one day when I was helping a little girl with her maths, and we didn't always do maths, we did other lessons, but that's what we were doing that day. And there was a little kid in the class called Jimmy, and Jimmy was the sort of child who just always wants attention all the time and can't do anything unaided. I'd given him work, which I knew he could manage. He was back in his seat. Everybody was in their chairs, and I was helping this one little girl, and I was focused completely on her. Wasn't paying any attention to anything else in the room. And then I felt this prickling at the back of my neck. I felt this sort of odd feeling in my gut, I suppose. And it was very uncomfortable. And I sort of knew what was going on. I knew that Jimmy was standing behind me and he was beaming at me his frustration and his anger because he wanted me to stop working with this girl and turn around and help him. And I didn't give it any sort of logical thought. I was just sitting there facing the front with this child. And I said, Jimmy, can you stop doing that? I'm trying to focus on helping this, whatever her name was, to do her sons. I'll come and work with you in a minute. So Asher's sitting across the classroom. He looks up, takes in the situation immediately and says, she got it. Jimmy, well done. She got it. And then he turned to the rest of the children and said, Miss got it. And every kid in that class started clapping. They were applauding me.
They were all in on this.
Yeah, they were, all 10 of them.
They were hoping and praying that you would understand their language.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it, Christy. I think that is what was happening. And they'd not had an adult who'd picked it up before. They could do it between themselves, but to find a grown-up who could actually tune into them. And I won't say that I could pick up every single child telepathically. I couldn't. But there were two or three in the class, and those kids I really could. Those children, I could actually pick up on what they were saying. And it started.
That's amazing. So what do you think happened from you to go from not understanding their telepathic communication to understanding it? What do you think happened within you?
I can only think that I had the desire to join in with them. I really wanted, I was very closely connected to them because I had a really good, strong rapport with my kids. So, you know, it's a bit like when twins can talk telepathically to each other. I think it was that kind of very close connection. And I'm sure Asher was to some degree facilitating it in whatever way he was able to do. And it just seemed that was what happened.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, in your press materials, in your marketing materials, you talk about more than just the telepathic communication going on. What were some of his other gifts?
Asher's, right. Yeah, well, I mean, working with the class was one thing, and you work with a class for 2, 3, 4 years, and then they move on to other teachers. But with Asher, it just sort of kept going. And so I still know him to this day, and he's a man in his 30s now. So he and I became quite close. It was more than a teacher-pupil relationship for various reasons. We were kind of thrust together in life, and we spent a lot of his older childhood and even his teenage years together. So as we got to know each other, and as he realised that I was really interested, he started telling me some of the, I think he used to call it knowing, that he had. And he would just spontaneously say something about past life or something about a vision of the future, or just things that just seemed to pop into his head unbidden. He didn't have any control over them. Sometimes he found it quite unpleasant and, you know, quite sort of distracting, but he didn't feel he could talk to anyone else about it. And I didn't feel I could talk to anyone else about it. So we just had this secret life going on between the two of us, if you like.
Amazing. Now, your materials here, what I'm reading from, says that he had clairvoyance, psychokinesis, and remote viewing. How did you discover this?
Are you a healthcare professional looking to translate psychedelic research into practice? Then register for Psychedelic Harm Reduction and Integration, a professional training offered by psychologist Elizabeth Nielsen and Ingmar Gorman at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Earn 12 continuing education credits as you discover how to better support clients who have an interest in psychedelics. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
I don't want to take too much of your time, but I would like to ask you a few simple favors. First of all, please rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you're listening. You know, it sounds like a simple little thing, and it is, but it has a huge impact for us because it helps other people find us in the podcasting algorithms. I don't know how it works, but I do know that it helps a lot. Next, if you would subscribe or follow wherever you're listening, whether that's YouTube or Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Pandora, Spotify, wherever you're listening, just hit subscribe or follow, and that helps you and it helps us. It helps you because then you receive notifications when we have a new episode that's out. It helps us because, again, algorithm magic, I don't know what happens, but it helps. And then finally, you can support our podcast in a tangible way by going to radiatewellnesscommunity.com/podcast and then click on support the show. Now, we have a new feature too. We are now on Patreon. You can find us on Patreon. You can also find the link to Patreon when you go to radiatewellnesscommunity.com/podcast. So on Patreon, for $3 a month or $5 a month, you can support your metaphysical and spiritual growth. You can learn about upcoming guests, and you can get early and ad-free versions of the shows. So please support us. This podcast is free for you to listen, but we have costs, and quite frankly, they come out of my pocket. So if you like this content, if you get a lot out of it, please see what you can do to give back. Thank you so much.
Right. Well, the psychokinesis was, there's a chapter in A Mind Beyond Words, what's it called? The Map, the Bottle and a Buffet Queue. And that is about one journey that we went on together, in which he firstly showed me a map he'd prepared of all the atoms in the universe. I think he was about 13 then. Yeah, like you do.
Right. All 13-year-olds do this.
Yeah. So he showed me this map, and I could not follow what he was talking about. He was trying to explain it to me, and it was just of a level that was way beyond my comprehension. And he said, okay, well, let's see if I can find a way of showing you how the universe works. And then we're sitting on a train at the time. So we're in a railway carriage, and he'd got a bottle of water on the table next to him. Just an ordinary plastic water bottle. And I'm sitting across the table from him. And he said, okay, try this. How could you move that bottle of water from where it is now across to the other side? And I said, well, it's still full of water, so it's too heavy to blow. And I said, the table's bolted to the carriage floor, so I can't shift the table. I said, that's not the sort of thing you're thinking, is it? And he said, no, that's not the sort of thing I'm thinking. So he said, I'm just trying to think which way around to put this. He said, if you see it where you want it to be, now I'd never heard of manifestation. I don't think The Secret had ever come out. I didn't know about any of this stuff. But he said, just see it where you want it to be and let life join up the dots. So I imagined, as best I could, this bottle of water moving across the table. But of course, all the years I'd lived, no bottle of water had ever moved across a table by itself. This didn't happen. So I kept looking, and he was just smiling gently and focusing on my side of the table. And nothing happened, and nothing happened. And then the carriage door opened. And I don't know if it's the same on trains in the States, but we have ticket collectors who come and check your ticket on the train. Yeah, about 4 or 5 minutes after we'd started this, the ticket inspector came along and he asked me for my ticket. And I handed it to him and he clipped it and said, thank you. And then he asked for Asher's ticket. Asher handed it to him and clipped it. He said, thank you. And sometime during that few seconds of interaction, for absolutely no reason that I could conceive of, the ticket inspector picked up the bottle of water and moved it across to my side of the table and dumped it there. And Asher just grinned at me, and I sat there completely flummoxed. I had, what just happened? And he said, well, in 3D reality, then things can't just move by themselves because that doesn't fit in with the science we have. And so it wouldn't work for us. So he said, so something had to happen to it, but it moved.
He needed an assist. Not what I expected at all, Jess.
No, I know. It's not like, I mean, a bit later in the day, and I won't tell all the stories because it'd be quite nice if somebody would buy my Beyond Words and read it themselves. But a bit later in the same day, he actually sort of made a queue of people just disappear instantly almost. And that was, you know, quite impressive too. And I said, well, did you do that the same way you did the water bottle? And he went, yeah, same sort of thing. But to him, it was just every day.
So he was fully cognizant of doing this. He was aware of what was going on very much.
Yeah, he knew that if he said it's just focus and intention, as long as you focus your intention on something, this will happen. Now, I was a newbie to all this stuff then. I've got to know a bit more about it now, but it was so weird.
So what time era are we talking about?
Let's think. That would be the early 2000s.
So 20 years ago.
Yeah, getting on that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to imagine. Yeah. Early 2000s being 20 plus years ago, but there we are.
But you're right. No, yeah, he was about 13 and he's now in his early 30s. So yeah, that's about the right time.
Now, did any of the other children in the class, I mean, clearly they had telepathy, but did the other children have some of the same gifts?
Not that I discovered, no. But then I didn't know them as well as I knew him, and I didn't know them as older people. I mean, the remote viewing that you mentioned earlier, that didn't come into effect until he was an adult. And that was actually because I'd seen a video clip on YouTube about it and got really interested and sort of thought, ooh, I bet Asher would enjoy this, and told him about it. And of course, he turned out to be absolutely amazing at it. So yeah, he just reads like a parapsychology textbook, really. Anything you asked him to do, he could pick it up.
That's amazing. So did you ever speak with Asher's parents about his unique and extraordinary abilities?
No, I left it to him, and he tried once to speak to family about it and was told that he was delusional. And at that point, he just said, we're never mentioning it to my family again. And so, no. And to this day, nobody in his family is aware of his abilities because they're just not the sort of people who want to know about things like that.
Now, you know him as an adult. You know him now. Is he using these abilities?
He's changed a lot as an adult. I think the diagnosis of Asperger's when he was 16 had a huge, huge effect on him, and not a very positive one, because he'd always known he was different. He'd always known there was something about him that he wasn't quite like the other kids in his class. And it didn't seem to bother him that much. But then his teacher or his family, I don't know who it was, when he was 16, they sent him to be checked out. And yeah, came across as a textbook case of Asperger's. And the doctor said to him, oh, well, it's a disorder, you see, and you've got these problems and you won't be very good at communicating. You won't be able to do this. You won't make friends very easily. All the negatives, all the sort of things that are wrong with you, which is just what a little rather shy 16-year-old doesn't need to hear. And so he sat through that. And then the doctor said, have you got any questions? And bless him, he said, well, sometimes I see things that other people can't see, or I hear things that other people can't hear. And the doctor said, oh, yes, yes, all the hallucinations and delusions. You do get quite a few people with Asperger's who do have that sort of thing. Just try and ignore it, son. Just try and put them to the side and realize that they just pretend and they're not real, and just carry on with everyday life and try and be like everyone else.
Oh, my. Yeah, that is all too common. I'm afraid we can teach and train these things out of children so easily. I really wish people would stop talking to these special and extraordinary children like that. It is demoralizing.
So do I. Absolutely, so do I. I mean, it just broke my heart. And I used to say to him, look, you have got these gifts. They are real. The stuff you've told me, there's no way anybody couldn't believe that if they actually knew the stuff that you're doing. He said, he got really upset. I mean, he was, you know, in the throes of adolescence anyway. And he said, look, if you believe any of this stuff I've been telling you through the years, then you're the one who's delusional and it's just rubbish and I'm not going to do it anymore. And for about 6 months, he would not talk about anything psychic. He wouldn't do anything like that. And the whole thing just became a complete no-go area. And that was unfortunate because it was just about that time that he discovered that he could move out of body, that he could do astral traveling. And so he was absolutely caught between being absolutely fascinated by what he was seeing and where he was traveling to and not wanting to talk about it because it was supposed to be delusional. And I remember going out with him one day and he said to me, there's this place I go, I've found my way of getting there, but I can't tell you about it because there's no words for it. And I don't want you asking me any questions, okay? I said, okay. And then a bit later on, he said, well, I suppose I could teach you how to do it. And then you could go and look and you could do it for yourself. So I said, all right, I'm up for that. Fine. So we sat down on a bench and it's quite sweet, really. He said, okay, so look straight ahead of you and half close your eyes, make them go all blurry. I thought, all right, being told to soften my gaze, fair enough. He said, then act like you're going to sleep, but don't really go to sleep. And just sit there for about 10 minutes like that, and then you'll see amazing things. So I said, okay, I'll try. So I sat there and I let my eyes go to soft focus. I was trying my best to do everything he'd said. And after about 5 minutes, there was this really deep sigh from next to me. And he said, oh, I'm just in your mind and you're not ready. You can't do it. You won't be able to. And that, of course, was a great disappointment to him because he was hoping to hand over the driving wheel to me, I suppose, so that I could do this for him. But no, he wasn't going to be able to because I didn't have his abilities. So gradually, as he got older, he started to come back to doing this stuff. And that's when I introduced the remote viewing and he realised this was something that we could actually test, we could actually do experiments, and he could see where I was going to be in a week's time, write it all down, draw pictures of it, and then a week later I get a third person to take me somewhere random, and sure enough it would be tick 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 tick, everything would be just what he said. And yeah, he couldn't ignore that, so he did start to realize that yeah, he did have abilities and the doctors didn't know it all. But as an adult, he's divided himself very, very definitely into the two sides. So on the one side, there's what I call physical Asher, who gets up in the morning, goes to work, comes home, sits in his room, doesn't mix with people, doesn't do anything very much, just lives his daily life. copes with his autism as best he can. And then there's telepathic Asher, who speaks to me almost every evening just through telepathy, goes off on his visits to what he calls the realms, which is his word for, I don't know, the Akashic realms. I don't know quite where it is, but he tells me about what he can discover there, what he sees there. And yeah, as long as he can keep the two sides of himself separate, he's happy.
Goodness. Did he ever get you up to speed to do the astral traveling?
Oh, I've still got my L plates on. I can't do it. Believe me, I've tried. I think for our relationship to work as it does, I need to be the grounded, ordinary one. So apart from having learnt to do the telepathy with him, I don't have psychic abilities. I don't. I'm a very ordinary person, but I'm able to pick up what he tells me. And he's decided that I have to put it into words for him and put it into a book, which is so we can share it with other people, which is why I wrote Remind Me on Words, so that I could share partly our rather unusual story and also a lot of the stuff that he's now coming through with.
These days, does he still use them?
I don't know, is the honest answer, because he shuts me out of that side of his life. I'm allowed 3 words on WhatsApp. We only at weekends, and I'll send him a message saying, hi, how you doing? How's your week been? And I'll get fine. And that's it. So he'll say fine. He'll say yes. He'll say no. If I say, is it raining there? I get yes or no, you know, but he won't engage in any face-to-face contact. He won't engage in phone or Zoom or anything visual. And I just get these words because, as he said to me telepathically, why would you want to use words when we've got this?
Fair.
It is. And he's never liked words very much. I mean, he was very slow to develop words. Mm-hmm. I've got my own theories about quite why that was. But I think all children are born with telepathic ability. Little babies have it with their mothers, don't they? And it's society just wants them to be verbal, because that's what it means to be part of the human race at the moment. You've got to use words. And I think there are children, and he was one of them, who just don't want to go down that route. They find words too limiting. And he said, you know, how can you get some of the concepts that I'm aware of and just stick them into a tiny little narrow box, which is a word, and that's not good enough. So, yeah.
Excellent point. And it's what we have, right? I've got a master's in linguistics. I know about words and language and how words match up with the ideas and the thoughts and the thoughts and everything. But I mean, that's what we've got. We are limited in that. It is clunky at best.
It is. Yes. I mean, there's some wonderful wordsmiths, and I'm like you. Language and literacy was always my main field of study. That's what I was fascinated by and always have loved. I'd hate there to be a world without words. I'd hate there to be a world without Shakespeare, but he'd be more than happy with silence as long as people would pick up the telepathy.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I think that we all have it to some degree. We all at least have the spiritual gift of intuition.
Yes.
We can either develop it or let it fallow. The choice is ours. And we can also have it taught or trained out of us too.
Yeah.
We all have. Yeah. Now, he had set up this test that you said. He had set up this test in order to find the adult who could understand him. Why is that? What did he see as the mission that you and he had together?
Well, he tells me that we'd had many past lives together and that we had agreed that I actually spoke to some channel guides once, and they said exactly the same thing through the channel, that yeah, he and I had had all these lives. And they even said we once had a life together again where we worked as teacher and pupil. And we decided to use that in this current life because it had worked well then. And they said that life was, now this was before I started our current level of telepathy, but this was way back, yeah, about sort of 15 years ago, I suppose. But they said, yeah, you're going to work with him again, but because that was when he'd cut himself right off from me after the diagnosis. Yeah. They said, you are going to work with him again, but it's not going to be the way it used to be. It's going to be through telepathy. And so I had prior knowledge of this, way before. And they said that's why you two chose to incarnate into the same lifeline, because you wanted to build this telepathy thing and share it with other people and tell other people about it, so that the other people in this world who are doing that and keeping their mouths shut, just like I did to begin with, will actually have the confidence to come out and say, now you come to mention it, that's what we've been doing as well.
I'll bet you've had a lot of interest in this book because it is a fascinating story.
It has been, yeah.
Yeah. So what have you been finding talking to people about this experience?
Well, interestingly, I mean, the book isn't officially released until the 1st of May, but it's available for pre-order in all good bookshops. But I've been able to get pre-publication copies, and I've been selling them on bookstalls around my locality. And every time I set up my bookstall and I have this little banner next to me that sort of says, you know, telepathy and autistic child and all the rest of it, I always get a minimum of 4 or 5 people that will come up to me during the afternoon and say, I know what you're talking about. I work with adults with learning difficulties. I work with Down syndrome children. I work with non-speaking people of various ages and stages, and they are communicating with each other and with me telepathically. And everywhere I go, I meet people who are saying exactly that. And I haven't told anyone before because I didn't think anyone would believe me.
Now, have you heard of the book Autism and the God Connection, Redefining the Autistic Experience Through Extraordinary Accounts of Spiritual Giftedness? This is a book.
Oh, that's Stillman?
It is, yes.
I've read that. Yeah, I have that book.
Yeah. So is this a fairly common thing to have these extraordinary spiritual and metaphysical, maybe even paranormal experiences with the autism spectrum?
Well, I've come across several children who are within the autistic spectrum who have had abilities, especially when I was working with home-educated teenagers sort of much longer along the line from when I was working with Asher as a little kid. And yeah, I've come across quite a few of them who could read my mind, quite a few of them who could just, one time I took some dowsing rods in and, you know, they were just amazing with them. They instantly knew what to do and picking all sorts of things up that I couldn't get. So I asked Asher about that, and he said everybody who is neurodivergent, you know that term, the sort of autism and ADHD and all these so-called disorders, have the ability to do that. But he said they've also got free choice. And a lot of them have it knocked out of them by the desire to conform and the desire not to appear weird and strange and be laughed at, be told they're delusional. So he said not all of them use it, and it's entirely down to the individual. But he said everybody who is neurodivergent has got something along those lines which they could use if they chose to.
Yeah. I talk to my clients as a medium and a Reiki master, a hypnotherapist. I talk to my clients about using their spiritual gifts, and, you know, we can turn them off. We can have that, you know, like I said, educated out of us, browbeaten out of us, trained out of us. But I never recommend that, because that energy has to go somewhere, right? That energy can go to anxiety, depression, insomnia, and forms of mental illness. So I never recommend anybody to shut it off, because this is something natural and normal. I mean, would you shut off your ability to breathe?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you completely. And I think it's such a shame that kids do have, well, kids and adults have it just sort of knocked out of them, really. It's such a waste, and it's such a gift, such a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Is a wonderful, wonderful gift. So why did you feel the need to write this book in the first place?
Well, going back to those channeled guides I was mentioning a few minutes ago, as well as telling me that he was coming back into my life and it was going to be through telepathy, they also told me, and you're going to write a book about it, and that's most your main life purpose. And so I mentioned this to Asher, who was 16 at the time, and he said, I forbid you to write my life story. And he got really angry with me. So it was put on hold for a very long time. But then once we started these telepathy sessions, as him being an adult, and I was picking up all the stuff he was giving me, he said, no, we do need a book. You were right, we do need a book. Now I can deliver this stuff to you. He calls it wordizing. He says, you take the ideas I give to you and then you wordize them. You have to write them down. I don't have to worry about finding the right word because you'll do that. So he can deliver it to me in all sorts of ways. He can deliver it to me through, doesn't have to be words. It can be sort of mind movies, or it can be feelings, or it can be an image I'll see in my mind. Yeah, so I've got the job of putting all that into words.
Is there anything we haven't covered that you think is important for our audience to know about?
Well, we haven't gone into any of the revelations he's given me from these realms he visits, but of course that would take a very long time to do. And there's a lot of it in part four of A Mind Beyond Words. So the first three parts are our life story, if you like. And the fourth part, I more or less hand over to him and say, okay, you've got all this knowledge. He tells me it's like a beginningless and endless library there that he can just go to and pick up the information he needs. So I've asked him about consciousness. I've asked him about reincarnation. I've asked him about manifesting, just all the sort of life, the universe and everything questions that you would ask somebody who can give you answers. And he has. Yeah, I think, read the book, please.
Yes, read the book, please. Oh my goodness. Just to be clear, Asher is not his real name. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. Because
anonymity.
He wanted anonymity. He's very, very shy, very, very reclusive. And the last thing he said, I want the book to be written, but I'd like all names changed. I'd like places changed so that I don't want people coming, knocking on my door and saying, here, are you this weird person who can do these funny things? You know, can you read my mind? Something like that would absolutely destroy him. But
so. On the YouTube version of this podcast, this is why we're going with a static image of the cover rather than even your image, because we don't want anybody to be able to trace back, and would like to protect anonymity whenever possible. Yeah.
I really appreciate that, Christy. And I know Asher will as well. That's so good of you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. 100%. This has been so interesting and eye-opening. I really do believe children have these abilities. I've seen it as a Sunday school teacher. I've seen the children communicate without words to build Lego villages and Play-Doh masterpieces, right? They don't even have to talk to each other. And I see this all the time, and we see this with my daughter and her friends as well. I do believe this, in a way, is the wave of the future, our new evolution being leveled up in a way. So I think this is important for all adults to know and understand that this is something that's going on and we need to pay attention to it.
So. I agree 100%. Yeah, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. I think that's just what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're all going to catch up to Asher. Eventually.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I'd like to.
You'll come and visit me astrally.
Maybe. Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
I love that. Doors open to you.
Oh, bless you.
Well, when is the publishing date for this book, Mind Beyond Words?
It's due out in the UK on the 26th of April and in the rest of the world, so in the United States, on the 1st of May. And it's on all the normal websites and available for pre-order.
Yeah, and we'll have the link in the show notes and everything so that people can pre-order it. That's coming up very, very, very soon. So I hope that you have many more interviews like this and are able to talk to a lot of people about this, because I think it is important.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. It's been lovely talking to you.
Too, Jess. Absolutely lovely talking to you.
Radiate Wellness is an international community of holistic and alternative healers, dedicated to helping you create spiritual, energetic, and physical well-being. To To learn more about our practitioners, services, classes, and events, or to schedule an appointment, visit us at radiatewellnesscommunity.com.
I'm Suzanne Giesman, and if you've ever wondered about life after death or if it's possible to connect with a higher consciousness, I invite you to join me for my podcast, Messages of Hope. It's my mission to share with you that our loved ones who have passed are always with us, and we are so very loved. I want to teach you how to live a consciously connected and divinely guided life. Listen here on the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network.